Hash Hash and Circle Up.
Welcome to On, the Hash House Harrier podcast for interviews, history, and stories. I'm your host, Ra.
Crotch Stumper is at it again, interviewing hashers while traveling through Malaysia. Enjoy!
Hello there, my name is Crotch Stumper. We are in Kuala Lumpur with Kamikaze. He's the past GM of many clubs here in Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, and China. He's been the past GM of KL Full Moon, GM Petaling, GM Nanasi Hash, and 3H5. Also the GM of the Dog Hash in Singapore, and current JM of the SHOT, the Solstice Hash on Tour. Kamikaze, welcome.
Welcome. First, we got to start this the right way.
What are you drinking there, buddy?
God's nectar.
Kamikaze, tell me your origin story. When did you first start the hash?
Actually, I heard about the hash when I was living in Israel in the late 80s and 90s. At the time, I believe they were alternating between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv once a week, but I was busy playing beach volleyballs. I knew when I moved to China in 1993, first thing I was going to do was reach out to the hash and touch base with the embassy, and quickly found the hash in Tianjin, China. My mother hash is Tianjin, China. 93, and then 94, I quickly became GM. Also proudly was the author, along with my significant other, of their current logo.
So the logo that Tianjin Hash has is designed in part by me.
Quite what does it look like?
It's a dragon wrapped around the tower of Tianjin.
Oh, very nice. Do you remember your very first hash?
Yes, it was a city run. When I used to play a lot of volleyball, it wasn't very cardio. And so I remembered suffering terribly when trying to run more than 100 meters at a time. So even though I was in my 20s at the time, I was really huffing and puffing to try to keep up with the more mature hash. It was a lot of fun, city run and running around the city streets of China and shouting on when everybody's looking out their windows looking at you. When you'd have your on, you'd be at a Chinese restaurant with big glass windows in front, and you'd have 20 or 30 of the locals looking in the window at you. You felt like you were in a fishbowl or something. So yeah. It was quite an interesting situation there.
Do you remember what the circle was like?
There was only about 20 regular members, all expats, some from Korea, some from Japan, mostly Western participants. The circles tended to be outside. We would conduct them with crowds around us many times. It was quaint, but I knew nothing else. That was what it was. It wasn't until I moved to Malaysia many years later that I really got to understand what the full impact of the hash was.
I'm traveling around KL, and there's not a lot of people who use hash names, but you have a hash name.
I do, yeah. Kamikaze was given to me by the Tianjin Hash, officially. A lot of background to that. I'm a pilot, just a private pilot, since I started flying when I was a kid. So I actually had Kamikaze as a CB handle when I was young. Also the way I run and the way I drive, some people think I'm a kamikaze. But it actually came from Tel Aviv, the bar that we used to frequent, which was called MASH, for more alcohol served here. And we used to drink Kamikaze shots. When I set my first run for Tianjin Hash, I made a bunch of kamikazes. Everybody ended up just passed out on the beach that we were at. So I was duly named by them the following week as Kamikaze. So.
Very fitting name, very fitting name. You've been hashing since?
1993.
Wow. I'm sure you have some hash stories for me.
Started in Tianjin and then moved to Guangzhou. Didn't hash much there because I was working a lot. Did a few as a guest. Yeah, work had me overloaded. Moved to Malaysia in 97. In Malaysia, I first joined Petaling Hash House Harriers, which runs on Saturday. And those runs tend to be all outside the city.
And that's in Kuala Lumpur?
Yeah. So outside of Kuala Lumpur to get to places where you're not running on roads. You're running in jungle, secondary jungle, and running in shiggy, and running plantations as well. Quite interesting because you have varied terrain when you're running and across. So you're going through rivers and swamps and all kinds of interesting stuff. Back then, it was not so difficult to get outside of town. Nowadays, it's getting a little bit more difficult. The highway system is good, but that's one of the reasons why we don't have a lot of the run sites that we used to. So, you know, we drive about an hour out of town to get into some decent areas which is suitable running for us. Most of the clubs that I'm in are similar. KL Full Moon is
mostly off-road. We don't like to run on roads or in the city except for our annual pub crawl, which is always a lot of fun, and you know, those will be in the city to hit the pubs. So, you know, but there is a fine balance because the further you go out of town, the less members will come. So Full Moon tends to be more on-site on-ons so that people stay and party afterwards, mm-hmm. whereas most of the other clubs will have their run and then a circle at the run site mm-hmm. with the beer truck. And then after that, then they go off to a restaurant somewhere. KL Full Moon tends to be a bit different, at least lately, the last several years, with more on-site. Keeps people together and it makes more of a party atmosphere because mm-hmm. then we can blare our own music and dance and whatever.
Tell us about some interesting stories that you've...
One I'll never forget, and most people that know me will never forget. I was doing a recce, actually, for a Halloween run. This was 2005.
You're scouting trails.
And so scouting trails, so mm-hmm. do reconnaissance, yeah, recce, yeah. right? So mm-hmm. out with a friend of mine and his girlfriend and my two dogs, two Labradors. And one Labrador liked to be in front of me and the other one right on my heels. So we were walking down a path. We had just broken through to where we knew where we were. And we're on a wild boar track, not far outside of KL, just only about 10 kilometers from my house. As we were walking down this track, I heard my dog yipe behind me. I turned around and this python had come out of the bushes and attacked him. Luckily, I had a parang with me, a machete. By the time I got the machete out, the python was already two times around him. He was about 8 inches in diameter and starting to squeeze on my dog. And so I could see my dog's eyes kind of bulging, even though he was quite a tall dog. He couldn't touch the ground anymore. So I just started hacking at the python. And I couldn't see the head. I had no idea what I was doing or if I was doing anything, because it seemed like the parang was just bouncing off of him. But little bits here and there, and finally, even though I hate to kill any animal, it was the snake or my dog. I was able to finally break through the skin and it opened up. Luckily, I hit some vital organs and it released the dog and tried to slither off into the bush. It was about 20 foot in the end. Luckily, the dogs just got up. The two dogs just started barking at it. You know, he was okay. He had some bite marks from his front elbow, if you will, of the dog to the top of his head. So that's probably an 8-inch span, 8 to 9-inch span where the bite marks were. Luckily, he was okay after that.
But, I'm sorry, course, you can't see your amazing hand gestures right now, too.
We didn't know what to do afterwards, so we... You know, my friend and I, we didn't know if there's, you know, family around or whatever. So we hightailed it out of there, got to the car. I called my fiance, I think, at the time. She told some of our friends, Oprah, mm-hmm. one of our Chinese Malaysian friends. First question is, where is it? We want to eat it. So, sorry, I'm not going back there to show you. But we did run through there the next week with the whole pack and no incidents and a fantastic Halloween run.
So, oh, wow.
It added a bit of a story behind the whole Halloween run. So.
Oh, yes. Opera, he says, I'm Chinese. If it moves, we eat it. If it doesn't move, we eat it.
That's about right.
That's a great story. Anything about Chiang Mai Inner Hash? What's going on with that?
It was 2006 was Chiang Mai Inner Hash. We were bidding for 2008 to be in Genting in Malaysia. So I was the vice chairman of that. At the same time, I happened to be GM of Petaling, GM of Full Moon, GM of Solstice, and GM of Nanazi, all while trying as vice chairman of the bid. No wonder my boss didn't care for that too much, but anyway. One of the things we tried to do was we held an event party at Chiang Mai. We had gotten sponsorship from Tiger in Singapore, in Malaysia here.
And Chiang Mai's in Thailand.
And Chiang Mai's in northern Thailand. Mm-hmm. So there was a train rumble. So the plan was Tiger here was donating us 400 cases of beer mm-hmm. to use at the party in Chiang Mai. Mm-hmm. We were going to put it on the train here, have the Malaysian embassy from Bangkok come down to the border crossing, clear it customs for us, so duty-free customs up to Chiang Mai, and then have our party up there at much lower cost because the beer was donated. Well, a few weeks before, apparently Singha Brewery, which was the sponsor of Chiang Mai Inner Hash, caught word that we were bringing Tiger. So they threatened to cancel the contract for the Chiang Mai Inner Hash. We quickly had to think about what to do. And all of a sudden, here I am with 400 cases of beer being delivered to my house. So I had to keep the 400 cases of beer in my garage until we could slowly sell it off to the various hash clubs. And then with that money, then we were able to buy their Leo beer up in Chiang Mai. So yeah, it was a bit of creative thinking. Not many people end up with that much beer in their garage, but it was pretty much took up two cars with my garage.
Oh, that's funny. I'm staying with the current GM of KL Full Moon, Rajesh, and it seems like his house is also a storage for Tiger 100 plus, all the other stuff. Yeah, it seems like the GMs always become a warehouse.
If you've got space, it tends to be that way. I've got so much hash stuff in my storeroom here. Yeah. I've got 50 cases of beer out in the car park now.
Really?
Yeah, so that's the stock for the next few runs.
Have you ever been injured on trail?
I've been fairly fortunate. I had one bad sprain one time, jumped over a hedge and landed on a leaf, but there was a stump under the leaf, tore up my ankle pretty bad. But other than that, I've been pretty lucky. All the usual thorns and all that kind of stuff that come out the next few weeks, and that's typical of the Malaysian jungle. You get, it's easy to get thorns and cuts and all that
and
stuff.
Leeches. But that's
just, leeches are
jungle
interesting.
Leeches.
Yeah, you know, we get the small black leeches here in Malaysia, and turned out to be maybe an inch long before they drop out. One interesting story about leeches. One time I was, used to hash with my dogs all the time. Yeah, one day I was after a hash, a few days after, I was going to feed my dog, Yellow Lab. All of a sudden, he's looking at him and something sticking out his nose. So I was like, what the heck is that? Finally, his leech was inside his nose. So he had to take some tobacco juice and squirt it in there, and it dropped out.
You could do sulfur tobacco?
Tobacco. Yeah, okay. A lot of people will put tobacco in their socks.
They go right through your socks. I've had them, through my shiggy socks, through my shoes, and they're between my toes.
Yeah. When we hash in the Nazi is a strip of beach on the east coast of Malaysia. One of our fellow hashers owned a small piece of land there. We used to do a camping hash there, and we'd have 150 people, 100 adults, 50 kids. A lot of the area that we'd go in was swampland. So one run that I set, we had myself, Oprah, and another guy, Greg Dahl, were setting the run. It was quite swampy. It was probably up to my chest in water. We're laying paper. You could actually see the cattle leeches, which are about 4 inches long, swimming after you as you're setting the paper. So luckily, they don't swim very fast, so you could outwalk them normally. So when the pack came through a bit later, we did get a few comments about that. Further in the trail, an interesting, when the pack was running it, of course, hares being hares, they don't set the easiest way to cross, right? So there was a bridge over one stream. It was a brackish stream. Of course, we put it straight across. Charlie Chandran, which is an old-time hasher here, unfortunately, passed away in the early 2000s. He's quite a short guy, maybe 5'5". Another girl, Christy, and a German guy, Thomas, all crossed the river at the same time. Well, Thomas tried to dunk Christy. It was right up to the lip level of Charlie. Charlie took in a big gulp of this brackish water. And then, of course, they look at it 10 feet over to the side, there's a bridge.
Just the harder road. Oh, my goodness. A KL Full Moon, what is a regular, typical KL Full Moon? What is that hash like?
Well, KL Full Moon hash is obviously centered around the full moon.
Mm-hmm.
So we run once a month or sometimes twice a month, the blue moon.
Yes, that's right.
We get one in August this year. Originally, the club started by running on the day of the hash, of the full moon, with whatever club was running that day. Mm-hmm. So they were kind of guests to that hash and started off that way. Then when they got to be quite significant, then in their own right, then they switched it. They fixed it to a Sunday, and it was just the Sunday closest to the full moon. Typically, sometimes other events or whatever taking place change occasionally, but the intent is to see the full moon and full moon rising instead of bad moon rising is our theme song. We've had ups and downs. I was GM in 2005 to 2007, I think it was, and then came back in 2017 to 2019, no, 16 to 19. The membership had gone down in between, just took a bit of advertising and a bit more fun. One of the things was to have the on-site on-ons. I do make a lot of kamikazes that go down well with the group that caught on. Mm-hmm. And so now we're actually one of the bigger clubs in Klang Valley. with 130 plus members, full-time members.
I would have to say the last KL Full Moon was very fun. It had how many people?
We had 140 people.
140. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was on the Hash Heritage site.
That's correct.
Oh, yeah. Could you tell me more about that? I understand you're on the committee.
Right. So in 2001, there was a group of Hash elders that had managed to get a piece of land from the government as a sports venue.
It was donated, correct?
It was given.
Given,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So given. Mm-hmm. The outgoing prime minister, mm-hmm. the first time, Dr. Mahathir, given us a piece of land, and then the AIDS Society was next to us. Yeah, we were able to secure an acre of land. For some of the older hashers or old timers, they would have remembered, and many of you might have donated to the hash house that was going to be built. The collections for that started in pre-1998 Interhash in KL. Raised several thousand dollars. I can't remember, about $350,000 if I'm not mistaken. But not enough was raised to build the house that we had wanted to. And it's going to take, in today's dollars, it would probably be 8 or 9 million ringgit. Unfortunately, we still had to pay quit rents and accounting fees and all this stuff because we're a registered company that owns the title. Mm-hmm. Most of that money, we've got about $16,000 in running costs just in every year.
In ringgit?
In ringgit terms, mm-hmm. yeah. So $4,000. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, all that money that was collected then has all been spent. We've done some fundraisers. We did a fundraiser for Bill Panton when he passed away, mm-hmm. made 100,000 ringgit there. And we've done a bunch of clubs have done fundraisers apart from that. So we've actually started construction of temporary shelter. They call it a temporary hash house. I call it a pavilion because it's mm-hmm. better suits the name. It'll be an open air cover, basically a pavilion with some restrooms and showers and bar serving area, mm-hmm. food serving area, and a stage with fans and lights and all that. So we're just in the process of starting the footings for that. Several of us that are on the construction committee to oversee the building of that. And hopefully by later this year, it's been tough to get out of the ground because of the rain. So our pits that we've got for the footings are constantly getting rained on every afternoon. So that's slowing things down a bit. As soon as we get a streak of good weather, we should be on the move. One point that I'd like to point out, if anybody that has donated, they can go to the Hash Heritage website and see where they've donated, and they can see all the audited accounts from the beginnings. You can see where the money's gone to without just taking my word for it.
Okay, well, I'll add a link to that. You are a JM of the Shot Hash. Tell us about that.
Solstice Hash on Tour. Obviously, as the name implies, the solstice is twice a year. And it's December and June, and depending on which hemisphere you're in, that could be winter or summer. Mm-hmm. Because we're 4 degrees north here, we can go either side of the equator and be in a different season, if you will. Our first run was June 2005, so I was founder of that along with Oprah, so we're joint GMs. I had just moved back to Kuala Lumpur from Singapore. My business was aviation leasing. At the time, I was working quite a lot with Tony Fernandez and his takeover of AirAsia. We managed to get AirAsia to sponsor us. They were giving us a bit of money and for freebies, so t-shirts that had to get approved by them. Then they would give us some seats on flights to go do the reconnaissance. So yeah, it all started out with them. They had our logo on there, and it's our theme is we fly to run with a stork with a suitcase. So Oprah came up with the idea, and because I had the connections with AirAsia, we started the discussion in 2004. And then in 2005, June was our first run in Bali. And ever since then, it's been growing. Too big for my liking, probably, more than 150 people, sometimes two. We've had 250. And it's too hard to contain a circle, you know, when you've got that many people. 150 or less is perfect for me. Unfortunately, I don't have much say.
Yeah.
Lately, we've been, as soon as we post a destination, we usually sell out within, one time we sold out within 3 hours.
Oh my goodness. That tells usually of a good leadership and a good event is when it sells out very quickly, because in the past it's been very well run.
Yeah, it's a lot of hashers like to travel in packs.
Oh yeah.
And it's convenient because if there's a hash at the destination we're going to, most of the time we will get a lot of assistance from them, finding the beer and finding the run sites, finding on sites. But a lot of times we go to places where there is none. The hares for the specific run have to do their own recces and go more often. So It can be challenging. As a participant, it's quite good because everything's done for you. Mm-hmm. They tell you which hotel to stay in, they tell you how much all your meals are going to be, and they tell you, you know, the bus is here, you get on, go to the run. So there's very little thinking involved.
And we like that.
Yes, it's a good thing for many of them.
Let's talk about some influential hashers in your life, living or past.
So, I mean, growing up in KL, hashing in KL since 97, you know, I was fortunate to know a lot of terrific hashers. Bill Panton, I mentioned earlier. Anybody that's been in KL at all.
Tumbling Bill was a legend.
I mean, 60s, 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
I was glad that I got to spend some quality time with him before he went back to the U.S.
What are some memories with Tumbling Bill?
Mostly around the hash lineage. He had all the hash lineage laid out on mm-hmm. a scroll. So trying to help get some of the clubs, the kennels that weren't on there officially updated. In Malaysia, it used to be that in order to congregate in groups of more than 25, I think it was, you had to be a club and a registered club. Once you are not registrar society, an ROS club, then we would count you then toward the hash lineage. I would help Bill do some of that. So you'll see most of the clubs that I've been involved with are all in the hash lineage because they're all ROS.
A lot of work in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's the ONSEC has to do a little bit of work sometimes. So doing the annual reporting, you got to do, you know, submit accounts to the government and all the names of the office bearers. Even if you're a foreigner, you can still be on it as long as you have a long-term visa.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It is a little bit, but luckily now it's mostly electronic. It used to be running into the offices and waiting in line and doing all that, but now it's mostly online. So.
Well, you've been hashing a long time. What are some of your favorite parts of the hash?
I mean, what I like the most about the hash is that anybody can participate and there is no errors about you. You know, everybody's in t-shirts and shorts. You wouldn't know if the guy's a lawyer or a garbage man. That's what I like about it. It can travel the world. I mean, I've oftentimes, just on business trips, I go, you know, to Sri Lanka, call them up and say, you know, is there a run? If not, is there a bar you go to? And they'd meet up. So that aspect, I travel a lot for a living, for business, and I don't have a lot of time necessarily, but you know, one night in the middle of the week, if there's something to do, then great. I mean, there's mostly hashers on this listening to this, so they know, but if you're moving to a new city, it's the best thing in the world because you
instant
automatically,
friends.
Well, you, instant friends, plus you get, you know, the guy that sells furniture, the guy that sells cars, the
true.
Guy that knows where the beer is, you automatically have these connections that might take you years to find otherwise.
You're married to a hasher, too.
I am married to a hasher, yeah. Juicy Rum is my wife. We've been married since 2009.
Before hashing.
We met on the hash.
Oh, you met on the hash. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Well, actually, she actually was at my house for a hash on triple on one time. I didn't know it at the time. She had come with a friend and then left. I was probably busy doing something, making margaritas or something.
Making kamikazes.
We had met a few times and then at InterHash 98, which was in KL.
Oh, of course.
Kuala Lumpur. Yes. Apparently, I don't know, I was probably too drunk to remember, but I broke her glasses. And so I had to pay her back for that. And then we started talking and she started coming to the hash more often. And
yeah. You sure the glasses weren't broken ahead of time?
They might have been. Wouldn't be the first time I've been suckered by a woman.
You've been hashing a long time. What's your vision of the hash? Is it going to continue to grow? Is it going to diminish?
You know, it is getting older and older.
Yes.
For the most part, Mother Hash, which was almost all expat at the beginning, as Dennis Kuz recently.
Yes.
You know, I listened to Dennis Kuz podcast.
Great
the
interview.
Other day. It's changing. It's mostly Chinese, and a lot of them don't speak English, and they don't know the traditions. Even KL Full Moon Hash, with the more recent committees, they don't know the 20-year history of it that I do. More than that, 30 years. We just had our 30th anniversary.
Uh-huh.
So I tried to bring some of that back in our 30th anniversary run, sitting on ice and doing down of Guinness with an egg in it to represent the moon, and most of them choked on it. So, those sort of things that I fear, particularly with Mother Hash, that it's starting to wane. Mm-hmm. The traditions, people don't know really what it was about from the beginning. And it is getting older and older. Luckily, some of the clubs, Mother Hash is bringing in younger people.
Mm-hmm.
As a club, it'll probably survive, but as some of the tradition may not. which is unfortunate. Full Moon has also got a good mix of, I wouldn't say young people, but middle-aged people, that younger than myself, that are energetic and like to have fun. That's the draw. Some of the other clubs, particularly when they go for an off-site on-on, go to a restaurant afterwards, they lose a lot of the people. People just, they're in their car on their way home, they might as well just keep going or go down to town and party elsewhere. Right. So unfortunately, a lot of the younger people in some of the clubs, that happens regularly. And unless you can keep people engaged on site, then it's you lose them.
Right, that's one of my favorite parts after doing the hash, after taking the showers in the back of the cars and going to the on-ons or the on-afters, the continuing celebration to eat somewhere. Mm. And we should go to a Chinese restaurant and order a multitude of, you're sitting at a giant table with a Lazy Susan, and there must be 10, 12, 15 dishes of things coming out, and you just rotate around and drink beer or drink water and tea,
right,
whatever, and continue the celebration. I love that.
I mean, that's the responsibility of the hair.
Yeah.
Pre-COVID, it was kind of standard to have, I mean, it was almost mandatory that, the hair would have to prepare or organize something. Mm. And so they would set the run, and then they would have to organize the on-on at a restaurant or on site. Post-COVID, some do, some hairs will organize something, some won't. That's another thing that's I think is a bit lacking, because if you just have the circle and then everybody goes do their own thing, it's losing part of it. And then we'd have what we call the triple on, which, after that, then we normally go to a club or whatever, dancing after that. If you don't have the on, it's hard to have a triple on. So,
right. So. Well, let's give a toast to Dennis the Menace.
Yes, to Dennis.
He was on a podcast earlier. You and I listened to it. It was fantastic listening to his hash history, and I love hearing that Ra is preserving a lot of this history. And Kamikaze, I thank you for sharing your stories today. Really look up to you. I met you in 2017 on a trip to KL 2018. And again, thank you for sharing your home and watching the Super Bowl today. That was pretty awesome.
Awesome game.
All right. My name's Crotch Thumper, traveling hasher, and on the podcast.
On.
Another great interview with Crotch Thumper. This is the On podcast. Hasher voices, hasher stories, hasher history. New episodes every week. Until next time, on, this is Ra.
To close the circle, here's the hash anthem sung by Mother Hash.
Swing.